The UN says there's still time to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, but we have to move fast.
Scientists say the consequences will be catastrophic.
The rhetoric is heating up right along with the planet.
It is a file of shame, cataloging the empty pledges that put us firmly on track towards an unlivable world.
The co-chair of the report insists it's now or never.
I'm Annie Reese. This is Politico Dispatch. On Monday, the UN released a major new climate report with some pretty dire warnings, basically saying, hey, get it together. There's still time, but barely.
What I was thinking about when I was reading it was what they're saying is that we have all of the technology that we need.
Carl Matheson is the senior climate correspondent at Politico Europe in Brussels.
And sometimes we don't think about climate change in the same way as other kind of political problems like healthcare or something like that, where we know what we need to do to fix it, but there's political choices that get made. And actually, yeah, climate change is exactly the same, and that's what the scientists were saying. You have everything you need, but you're still not doing anything, and the choice is yours.
So in lieu of summarizing a 1,000-page document, Carl Matheson is here with five key takeaways that you should know from the report. So the first was about warming, that halting at 1.5 degrees is going to be decided in Beijing.
Yeah, and this isn't actually something that the IPCC explicitly said. What they said was, if we're going to stop warming at 1.5 degrees, which is the lower limit set by the Paris Agreement, then we will need to see global emissions peak by 2025 at the latest, and then drop really sharply through the rest of this decade and cut by 40 to 50% by the end of the decade, by 2030. So speaking to people about what could make that possible, which governments could enable that, obviously there's a lot of governments that have inadequate policies that don't align with that. Mm-hmm. But China now controls about a third of the world's emissions, and so it really dictates the direction. So when we're talking about whether or not we can peak, China currently is looking at a peak sometime before 2030, but they haven't been explicit. Really, no one's expecting that policy to mean in the next 3 years. So now we look to China, and there's been a lot of pressure from the kind of Western countries in the last year on Beijing saying, we really need you to step forward your peaking goal and at least start to drop your emissions in the next few years if possible.
Mm.
There's no indication at the moment that China has any intention of doing that, however.
And what about other major emitters other than China? I mean, like, where does India stand on coal use? I mean, it's projected to take over China as the most populous country by 2030. I know it's not nearly as industrialized, but what about other major emitters?
Yeah, every country is coming from a different starting point. And so within the UN spectrum, we sort of judge countries differently, and each country will fight for its right to emit a certain amount and like to fight over what makes their fair share. And India is definitely the country with the largest and kind of least developed of all the major emitters. So we expect them to continue to grow their emissions for some time yet, but they've promised now to peak, to reach net zero emissions by 2070, which would be in line with a 1.5 degree goal. But it really does depend, a lot depends also on how these countries travel in the meantime, because what they emit in that time just hangs around in the atmosphere and keeps on warming the planet. So everyone needs to step up for sure. And there are other G20 emitters, and frankly also Europe and the Americans and all these Western countries, Australia in particular, where I'm from, they can all also do more, even though in a lot of these countries emissions are falling. All of these options or all of these things kind of need to happen in concert. But I think the point we were trying to make in the story was that there's only really one country that can kind of make or break this, and that's China.
That's really interesting. So the next takeaway, carbon capturing, was kind of surprising to me, honestly, because environmentalists have been against carbon capturing for so many years because they see it as a lifeline for fossil fuel companies. But now those scientists are embracing it.
They're embracing it as a way to soak up emissions from really hard to abate sectors. agriculture, aviation, places where we are probably going to see a long tail because we can't get rid of it. And when we say carbon capture, we don't just mean sticking a piece of machinery on a filter on a power plant to capture and then bury the carbon. We also mean growing more forests, basically. So these are things that we're already doing, and that's what the scientists are saying, is we are going to have to ramp up the things we know that we can do, like better forestry management, but also we might need to look at some of these other technologies. For sure, that's where environmentalists and some scientists get squeamish, and it's where the fossil fuel industry gets really excited.
So third takeaway, failure to act means tough choices in the future.
Yeah, well, following on from the first takeaway, that if we don't do what they're telling us to do, which is peak emissions in the next few years, then we have to deal with the consequences. And the consequences of that are that we're going to have to probably, if we want to keep the global temperature at 1.5, then we'll have to soak up some of the extra emissions. So that's when this carbon dioxide removal stuff gets really, the scale just goes through the roof. We're going to have to do a lot of afforestation, a lot of carbon dioxide removal, all sorts of things like burning biofuels and then capturing the emissions. And doing any of these things at scale comes with huge trade-offs, including with food security, because most of them use a lot of land. Mm-hmm. So that's one option. And then on the other hand, you just say, well, okay, do we then adjust our expectations about where we're going to settle our temperature eventually to, is it going to be 1.6, 1.7? I mean, at the moment, we're heading for more like 2.4. And none of these are good places to go.
So next takeaway, governments need to help people cut consumption.
Yeah, and this is a really interesting thing, actually, that's playing out. It's kind of really political in Europe at the moment because we're going through this enormous gas crisis and energy prices are really high and everyone's trying to figure out how you stop using Russian energy. And everyone's kind of having this Jimmy Carter moment where no one wants to be the politician to stand up and say, turn your heating down and put on a sweater.
Yeah.
The politics are just really difficult. And what the scientists said yesterday is part of cutting emissions is not just getting cleaner energy, it's using less energy. Now, they focused on behavior change. People can change their behaviors and that can have a significant impact on global emissions. But what they were really quick to point out was that you need governments to create the enabling conditions. Behavior change, individual action is important, but government policy is a prerequisite for any of that happening. Don't shove it onto the people, basically, was what they were saying.
Yeah. Final takeaway, batteries are the answer for clean vehicles.
Yeah, and this is one that, again, it's a really political one for automakers because they've been very keen, because of the way their engines work, they've been very keen to promote the use of hydrogen and alternative fuels. But the scientists said that is just a really expensive and kind of it's basically a dead end for cars. So that's why they said just build out your batteries, make sure that at the same time you make sure your electrical system is powered by renewable energy so you're not driving around on coal-powered electricity. And that's the path forward that they recommended for all economies.
The climate report was a little delayed because there was a big fight over the wording in the summary. What was that fight over? Can you kind of take me behind the scenes into that?
Yeah, it's an odd process. The scientists work on this thing for, 7 or 8 years. They've been collating all of the climate science that's happened in that time. And then they produce a report and they send it off to governments. And then at the very last stage, they meet for 2 weeks. Usually it's 1 week, but this year it's 2 weeks. And they present the summary for policymakers, which is this sort of shortened brief document. It's meant to be a useful document for governments. And basically they usually have back and forth and they ask for clarifications. This time it seemed more than normal. And from what I was hearing from scientists who were involved in the process, particularly the Saudis and the Indian government were both very active in asking for specific things, The Saudis in particular were looking for a lot of stuff around carbon capture to be put in. And so, you know, these pet issues that will potentially help the fossil fuel industry last longer. But also the Indians are very, very keen to promote the idea that because of the historical responsibility that rich countries have for climate change, the notion of equity should be put all the way through the text. So there's a lot of political back and forth in that. And I think they just came out completely exhausted. And it also was the longest approval session that we've ever had for an IPCC report. They went 2 days over. So they all came out really tired.
It is an interesting point you made earlier about the fact that Putin's invasion of Ukraine has really thrown into sharper relief Europe's reliance on Russian energy. And now there's sort of a two-pronged reason to become less reliant on certain forms of energy.
100%. And I think we're going to see this play out. There's an immediate response. And I think the way most people are thinking about this is short-term, long-term. The immediate response requires us to replace the fossil fuel energy that Europe gets from Russia. And the quickest way to do that in most cases is to replace it with other gas or oil or coal, which they've just sanctioned. And I think in the longer term, there's an enormous discussion going on now about how to innate or how to accelerate Europe's Green Deal as kind of the ultimate Russia sanction. You know, if you stop needing this stuff, then but because you've built out your renewables, you've managed your energy efficiency regime, that's kind of the best thing that you can do. Doesn't make it easy, but for sure there's a new political impetus into the green agenda in Europe now.
Carl Matheson, thank you so much for talking with me.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Also in the news, the White House plans to once again extend the moratorium on federal student loan payments through the end of August. The current pause on payments was set to expire May 1st, potentially impacting more than 40 million Americans. The new August 31st extension, however, is much shorter than what many Democrats have been requesting, which tees up another fight over student debt just months before the midterm elections. And the Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday proposed banning nearly all remaining uses of asbestos, a material known to cause lung cancer when inhaled and that still lingers in millions of U.S. homes and schools. Today's episode of Politico Dispatch included music composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Be sure to follow Politico Dispatch if you haven't yet, and if you can, leave us a rating and review. It helps more people find the show. I'm Annie Reese. Thanks so much for listening.